It's interesting for me to get into the nature of belief because as a scientist, when I was programmed into the history of science leading to my degree, it was very clear that after the scientific revolution, where modern science entered the world after 1543, one of the primary shapers of the new science was René Descartes. And Descartes was the one who told us the beliefs that we held up to that moment, how did we know they were true or not? We just bought them for centuries. And so it was the introduction of a scientific methodology at that time that was used to distinguish what was really true from what we really believed. And so this was a very important understanding. At that same time, Descartes also brought us the concept that there was a mind and a body and that this duality was a very important part of our reality. However, subsequent to Descartes, Isaac Newton came in and gave us the foundation of the mechanisms of how the universe works. He gave us mechanics, which is also physics. So Newtonian physics or Newtonian mechanics was an understanding of the universe that revealed that you could understand, for example, the movement of the planetary bodies in our solar system by just studying the physical characters of those planetary bodies, the mass, gravity, which at that time was part of the mass, the acceleration of this body in space. And by putting this kind of data into an equation, you could accurately predict the movements of the universe. Well, this is a very important and relevant understanding offered by Newton for this reason, because he said you can understand the operation of the universe without invoking spirit, without invoking God, without invoking invisible forces. And so consequently, the new era of science said, rather than building into any hypothesis invisible sources of information, such as God or spirit or thoughts even, that you could just understand the world by looking at the physical characteristics of it. Well, this had a profound effect on the concept of a mind-body duality, because the body, of course, was the physical entity, but the mind itself was non-physical, an etheric quantity or quality. And so the significance about that was after Newton, then science began to look at the body without incorporating the mind, because according to that physics, the mind was in no way able to alter the physical reality, not being physical itself. So the rest of our biology was then focused on understanding how life works by strictly looking at the physical apparatus, the mechanisms, the machinery of life. And we left the beliefs out. But it was really very interesting because during this path of scientific evolution, beliefs were actually recognized to be very profoundly important. And in fact, even today, medicine still recognizes that at least one-third of all medical healings are due to the actions of belief. We call this the placebo effect. The placebo effect is simply when a patient who is suffering from disease believes they are getting a treatment or a medication that will actually affect that disease, the belief in that treatment or medication will actually lead to a healing response, even though the treatment or the medication has no effect at all, such as the use of a sugar pill. So it's very interesting. Medicine has still left the belief out of the equation, yet still acknowledges under the table that one-third of all of our healing is related to the mind's action in this placebo effect. So the mind has a very important role in influencing the character of the body. It's only in the last recent few years that science is actually taking a new look at the role of the mind and the serious character of how this mind influences life, because we're delving into a new understanding called epigenetic control. The new understanding, epigenetics, is different than the conventional version that most people are familiar with called genetic control. Genetic control simply means control by genes. The new science is called epigenetic control. The prefix epi means above. So when I use a word like epidermis, that means essentially the layer above the dermis. Well, then I say, well, wait, what does epigenetic control mean? Well, literally it says control above the genes. Well, all of a sudden, rather than looking at ourselves as genetically controlled automatons, the new science of epigenetics says that the perceptions of an individual and the environmental signals and information in the world around an individual profoundly shape the genetics of that individual. So all of a sudden, we're not genetic automatons, but we are malleable, changeable structures that are influenced by our perceptions of the environment and the environment itself. So, for example, if I take our conventional perception of science and say, well, tell me about a human. And I would say, well, yes, a human is a biological entity. It's a frail entity. It's frail because it's susceptible to diseases and all kinds of parasites and influences and weaknesses that are just inherent in the structure. And of course, this is the reason why we have such an elaborate and very large medical foundation to support the nature of fulfilling health and life in a frail biological body. However, we're beginning to find that that frailty may itself be just a general belief. So, for example, what can belief do that, you know, that we can demonstrate there's more power behind us, but beliefs are a limitation? Well, one typical example that most people are familiar with is dealing with firewalking, where people walk across hot coals. And you say, well, what does that have to do with beliefs? And the answer is very simply this. If you're going to walk across those hot coals, the first thing is this: you should entertain the belief that this is safe and not harmful. Because those people that actually start to walk across the coals and have doubt, and they believe that they might get burned, actually get burned. And in fact, you could start walking across the coals in a firm belief that that you're not going to be hurt by these coals. And in the middle of the walk, the moment you question, can I really do this? Instantaneously, you will get burned. So the significance is belief allows you to walk across the hot coals, and disbelief actually can lead to a consequence of severe burns in doing the very same thing. So the walking across the coals safely is really a reflection of the beliefs. Another example about belief is very interesting is that we all believe in our human characteristics of how much we can do as humans. And if I suggested to you, Steve, listen, why don't you just go out in the parking lot over here and lift up this car for me? And you would go, come on, you know, that's an absurd idea. I'm not going to be able to lift up a car. Humans can't lift up a car. And yet it's very interesting because there are reports from all over the world about people, especially women, who have been involved in a car accident, and to free a child trapped under the car, a woman will go out and lift up the car and hold it up long enough to let people take the child out from under the car. This is not an unusual situation. It's been repeated over and over and reported over and over again in the media. And the issue is, well, how can a woman lift over 1,000 pounds when conventional weightlifters who train to do this weightlifting in competition think that like 700 or 800 pounds is like that's a top end that we can lift up as humans? And here a woman, without thinking about it, goes out and lifts up a car to get a child out. Well, the issue is the belief of the weightlifter is 700 or 800 pounds is heavy and we have to lift it. The belief of the woman in that situation is not, can I lift the car? The belief is, I must lift the car. I have a child under that car. The belief is so strong that it's not a question that she can't lift up the car. So the interesting point is, this is an average situation. These are not strange weightlifter people that just happen to get in an accident and lift up the car. These are just average people that can do these kind of extraordinary feats. Another one that I like to talk about in my lectures is the nature of these believers in the South that are Pentecostal Baptists. They work themselves up in a religious ecstasy state. And in that state of ecstasy, they try to demonstrate or show that God protects them. So a number of these groups actually play with rattlesnakes and copperheads, very poisonous vipers, to demonstrate that God protects them from these vipers. And interestingly enough, in their demonstration, even if they get bitten by these vipers, they really have no negative or harmful effects from it. But those are the lightweight ones compared to the ones that I want to talk about, because within this group of people who are testifying to God's protecting them, their belief system is so strong that God protects them, they actually drink strychnine in toxic doses and have absolutely no harmful effects from it. Well, all of a sudden you say, well, wait a minute, drinking strychnine and not have, this doesn't make sense in our human world. Well, of course, because basically our belief system is we're frail and susceptible to these things. Yet these people in their religious ecstasy have no doubt. There's no question in their belief of, will I drink this or will I get, you know, affected or not? They are of a very firm belief that this actually will not affect them at all. And it doesn't. So all of a sudden we have to say, you know, walking across fire, lifting a car, drinking poison, and not having any adverse effects from all these things. Where does that fit into our normal picture? And the answer, it doesn't. It doesn't fit in because our beliefs don't allow that. But our beliefs are the limiting factor.